You're coming to Coeur d'Alene, and that's pretty exciting for us that we get to see you. And the thing that I'm remembering is so fondly that we were about the third to last time that you came to town with Prairie Home Companion in that final month of doing those shows, and we're still glowing from the good time you gave us with that show. So thank you for that.
It was a wonderful last go round. I had no regrets, and I was on the road to retirement. It was a sensible thing to do at the age of almost 74. And there was a kind of a symmetry about it. I was 74. I had started Prairie Home Companion in 1974. And I had this wonderful group of people, Tim Russell and Sue Scott and Fred Newman and Rich Dworsky at the piano. And they were just the best. I still think of them fondly. And my idea was that I wanted to go out when the show was doing really, really well and when I felt really good on stage. I didn't want to wait too long. I had an adventure in St. Paul the year before, when I woke up in a hospital room and I'd been taken there by ambulance, my wife, and I'd had this seizure in my sleep. And boy, that was the knocking on the door. That was the muse of maturity saying, you know, this is time, mister, you know. And so I did. And I was glad that Coeur d'Alene was on my route, because I used to go through Coeur d'Alene every summer when I was a kid. We had relatives in Spokane, and we went to a Bible conference in St. Mary's. And I had cousins living in St. Mary's, Idaho, who were wild kids. I had a great time with them. They loved explosives. They were evangelical Christians, as I was, but they still loved cherry bombs. And they had a chicken coop, and they liked to toss a cherry bomb in there and see enormous white go berserk. I could talk more about it, but no need to.
Well, let's talk about St. Mary's a little, because I'm going to come in here and say that in 1932 and 1933, my dad was the band director in St. Mary's. And he took his little backwoods band to the state music meet and won all kinds of honors there. And just a few years ago, I went to St. Mary's to do some reporting on timber issues, and I wanted to talk to a 100-year-old logger, and they didn't really want to talk to me until we talked long enough on the phone that they found out that my dad had been their kid's band director, and so that got me right in their house, and I had a fine time with the people from St. Mary's.
It pays to know the right people and to come from the right parents. These connections mean a lot.
They do. And actually, speaking of mean a lot, what I do want to talk about is, as well and good as that is to understand when one should retire, and that certainly did make sense, how do you really adjust your metabolism from all of that wonderful, intense, embracing activity into a quieter time?
It's not really quieter, but I mean, it looks quiet from the outside because it's a man sitting at a laptop computer and a kitchen table. But in his own mind, there's a lot going on. The life of a writer is very adventurous. The radio show was basically a four-day week. It was Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and then recovery on Sunday. But writing is, for me, is every day. It starts when I get up about 5 o'clock in the morning, and it goes until noon, early afternoon. And I have a lot of projects that I'm working on. I'm 77, and at 77, it doesn't really matter what comes of them. I do, you know, plan to publish a couple of books, and I'm working on a screenplay and a musical, but the ambition is gone, you know, to be a success. It doesn't mean anything anymore, but you still love the work. And to me, this is a sort of paradise. And I recommend it.
The work, which includes, among other things, this once every 2 week column that you do, that a lot of us have signed up for, and so we're able to hear some of your musings every now and then, and so sometimes what you do does land on some ears.
I love 750 words. I love that length, and that's a standard newspaper column. Some people go longer, but I like that length, and I can go on doing that, you know, forever, I hope.
And as much as you extol the virtues of sitting quietly at your laptop and writing, there's still something for the sound and the smell and the feel of a crowd, isn't there?
There is. I'm not sure where that leads or what that where that goes or what I want to do with that, but it still is intriguing to stand on stage and to say what you think, but at the same time to be a humorist and to tell stories. And I like to sing a little bit. I'm gonna come out there and do that soon and get to meet your orchestra.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about that, because I guess, yeah, are you going to do the Young Lutherans Guide with them?
They asked me to do the Young Lutherans Guide, so of course I will. I'm happy to do it. I haven't done it, I would say, in about 15 years, but I'm happy to do it and maybe sing a couple of songs and do... I want to do some limericks with the orchestra. I'll bet they haven't done limericks in their careers before, so I'll try to write some limericks about people in the orchestra.
Oh, that's a nice idea, and maybe even find a tune to set them to?
There already is one, Waltz Me Around Again, Willie. And when I was a kid, we would do limericks to that tune. And there's a chorus, ay, 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 ay. In China, they do not have chili, so let's have another one just like the other one and Waltz Me Around Again, Willie. And then you sing your limerick.
Now, as a person who has changed the words to just about every song imaginable, have you ever felt you went too far on changing the words to a song, or is no song safe from you?
Well, parody, I think, was my obligation, and I loved to do parodies of writers of my generation, Paul Simon and Springsteen and the Beach Boys, and Bob Dylan. Bob Dylan begs to be parodied. So I like to send those people up and make fun of them. I was the only one doing it, I think. And I'm happy changing words, and especially changing the words of my own songs.
You have had, as you already spoke about the childhood experiences you've had, there always has been this connection kind of between the Twin Cities and this area, and we've taken good advantage of that over the years.
People who people who came to Minnesota and settled and were not satisfied here, they headed for Washington. They wanted to stay in the northern tier of states, but they were looking for a different climate. And so they headed west. They weren't drawn toward California, except if they were elderly, or if they had, you know, ambitions to become hippies or beatniks or get into the movies. But they went to Washington. I have relatives and old classmates in and around Seattle, and they seem very happy out there.
And then I've heard a rumor that you're going to put together some Christmas shows this year. Is that true?
Yes, we're going to do one in San Francisco, one in Atlanta, one in New York, one in Minneapolis, and see how that goes. I want to get the old gang together, Tim Russell and Sue Scott and Fred Newman and Rich Dworsky, and I want to sing duets with Heather Massey, who is my favorite duet partner because she is my height, and so I can read her lips when I forget the lyrics, and she's a much better singer than I am, and so that makes me, you know, sound okay.
And when you come to Coeur d'Alene, are you going to have Rich Dworsky with you?
Yes, he's going to come, and we'll do a few little things on our own. I want to sing a few sonnets, and I want to sing a sad song from my childhood. I grew up with sad songs. I loved them, and they, for some reason, made me happy. And maybe we'll do something with the audience. We'll see who comes.
That doing something with the audience is, I think, one of the most important things that you gave this country in Prairie Home Companion, because you've single-handedly tried to convince people that they really can sing out loud and in groups together, haven't you?
Oh, of course they can, if there are enough of them. And I think in that part of the country, for sure, it would be easy. New York is a little tougher to get people to sing, but we did nonetheless. We once did a show in Town Hall, and the New York Police Department closed down West 44th Street, and 2,500 people came out for the last song of the show, and they sang Silent Night on West 44th Street. It was something you remember forever. I did a show at Ocean Grove, big old Methodist tabernacle on the shore, New Jersey shore, and walked out into the crowd. And they were in a mood to sing. We sang the Battle Hymn of the Republic, and they knew four verses. They knew the terrible swift sword, and they knew the dim and flaring lamps, and they knew in the beauty of the lilies Christ was born across the sea, and then they knew the other verse that I've now forgotten. And we sang that and hymns, and we sang I Saw Her Standing There. She was just 17, if you know what I mean. The way she looked was way beyond compare. We sang all of these songs. They were all standing. There were people weeping in the audience. They were singing, "It Is Well With My Soul." And I walked down the aisle and singing bass with the audience. And I saw this guy. He was wearing motorcycle boots and a tan leather jacket, and it was Bruce Springsteen. He was there all by himself, no entourage, and he was singing along with everybody else. To me, this was one of the miraculous moments in the history of the show, that this famous rock and roll star, could stand in the middle of a crowd of people and sing, when peace like a river attendeth my way, and sorrows like sea billows roll, whatever my lot, it has taught me to say, it is well with my soul. He was singing that song. Isn't that amazing?
So we might conclude from that group singing is possibly the most democratic thing we have in our civilization?
Well, I don't know. I don't know. It's up to young people. And I've done this at colleges where young people were willing, but they had their cell phones out and they had to Google the song and follow along on a screen. Because people my age screwed up American education. And we stopped teaching young people our common culture, and we instead taught them to believe that they were creative spirits and they should write their own songs. And so they went off and they wrote dramatic, terrible poems, and they didn't learn Oh, Beautiful for Spacious Skies, or My Country, 'Tis of Thee. They didn't learn these songs, and it was a terrible shame. My generation is responsible for a lot of mistakes.
So I think you're going to at least undo one of these, so we'll look forward to singing along with you when you come to Coeur d'Alene in a very few days. Thanks a lot, Garrison.
You can count on it. Thank you.